Hi there, everybody. I'm Seth.
I'm Ethan.
And we are going to be talking about our favorite 2023 movies. So you might notice that the intro music on this one is the brief and not so brief music. If you're listening to this in the brief and not so brief feed, you're not surprised by that. But I'm going to drop this into my regular feed as well, just because I know there's more subscribers there and folks might want to hear our opinions about favorite movies. This is not, of course, our Oscars thing that we've done, you know, sporadically the last couple of years. We'll probably still do that in a couple of months. But this is just like reviewing what we watched in 2023.
Yeah, like you said, also excited to do the Oscars video later with hopefully my cousin Peter, because that's always a fun thing that we do every year. And so looking forward to doing that, maybe adding a couple of movies that I haven't seen yet from this year.
Yeah, I think I only watched like 30, 31 movies in 2023 that were 2023 releases. Mm-hmm. on my Letterboxd, which, by the way, you can follow me on Letterboxd. It's just Seth Easley. And what are you, Ethan?
I need to double check mine later. Okay. I don't remember what my username is.
All right, I'll put it in the show notes. But I have logged 97 entries for films in 2023, so lots of non-2023 content, including, you know, most of the Oscar stuff from last year. But I do want to say also that we'll talk a little bit about other first-time watches in 2023 after we finish the main list, so stick around for that.
Yeah, I think it's also worth mentioning that even though this is just 2023 movies, we didn't necessarily get to all of the major hits, the things that are going to be nominated for Oscars. We did our best to hit those, but I think there's a couple international films and a couple other films that I'm thinking of that we'll discuss later that we're going to definitely have to get to before Oscar season that may have made this list if we had seen them. And so maybe our list will change down the line. We'll see.
Yeah, definitely. I expect to watch a bunch of stuff for Oscars that I would have watched before now if we hadn't just decided to record kind of on a whim. Ethan sent me a note a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, sure, we can do that. So we will go 10 through 1. I sort of tentatively have mine ranked, but no guarantee that my number one movie is the best thing I saw last year. It's just at the moment, I'm like, yeah, I think that was the best one.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for my like 10 through 6.
Yeah.
You know, because I didn't see that many movies, 2023 movies in 2023.
Yeah, it's also like mixing what you think is the best versus what was your favorite and trying to find a balance between that.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at my Letterboxd reviews and then I was like, nope, that one, I'd like that one better. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, and if I mention a movie and it's something that you've got further up your list, we'll delay talking about it until you get to it.
Mm-hmm.
That way I don't steal your thunder. And same with me.
Sounds good.
Okay, so what do you have for number 10?
Number 10, I have David Fincher's The Killer.
Okay, nice. That one was close to making my list, but didn't quite make it.
Yeah, I honestly didn't anticipate it making my list, because even though I like this film, I didn't love it. It didn't wow me like a lot of other Fincher mm-hmm. films, but I think as a director, he's someone that's consistently putting out good work, always has a lot of great casts, obviously very well known for his style, and was very yeah. prevalent in this movie. Big Michael Fassbender fan, so that was really fun to see him do some cool stuff. Overall, really solid. Nothing crazy, I feel like, but a really
yeah.
well shot, well acted, interesting concept that was done in an interesting way.
Yeah, it was definitely intense too, and it's one of those things where like he repeats that mantra so many times that I feel like somebody could have gotten really annoyed.
Yeah, I could see someone getting frustrated with that.
Yeah. But yeah, no, good movie. Okay, so my number 10, I put The Boys in the Boat. I don't think this is a great movie. This is George Clooney directing it. It's a book adaptation. It's inspiring. It was enjoyable. I felt like there were some things that would be really challenging for a director to film, for instance, you know, the guys in the water. Like, how do you do that? And I felt like they pulled it off really, really well. And that's kind of the reason that that I have it on my list. It's just because I feel like it was... It kept it dynamic. It kept it, you know, kept the tension going whenever they were in a race.
Very nice. I didn't end up seeing it, but I heard some good things. So glad to hear that it was at least enjoyable.
Yeah. All right. Your number 9?
My number 9 is Barbie by Greta Gerwig.
Okay. I do have that one further up. So we'll delay Sweet. Talking about that until I get to it.
Sounds good.
All right. My number 9 is Renfield.
come on.
And this is one where like I know this isn't a good movie, right? Strictly speaking, I don't think it's really amazing or anything. It was just super entertaining. It was the kind of thing where I watched and I'm like, wow, this was way more enjoyable than I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. And I've never really been a horror movie person. I've watched some horror movies with you just because you've gotten more into the genre, but I do love comedic horror, you know, like Shaun of the mm-hmm. Dead and Hot Fuzz, you know, where like there's these comedic levels of gore. It just cracks me up. I love it. And Renfield leaned into that.
Definitely delivers nice. In that aspect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So my number 8 is Creed 3.
Oh, that's mine too.
Sweet. Awesome.
Yeah.
I was a really big fan of this movie. I would say I do still think it's the weakest in the trilogy of Creed movies, yeah. which is in no way a slight to it. I think it's really actually quite incredible that this was Michael B. Jordan's first directorial debut. Obviously, Jonathan Majors has been in the media a lot right now for some stuff, but there's no doubt that the performance in this movie was really solid, especially the chemistry that he had with Michael B. Jordan. So overall, just took what I thought was an excellent two films in the Creed, you know, saga, or I guess Rocky saga with the Creed spinoff, and did something unique with it. Had a lot of callbacks to some anime style. I know Michael B. Jordan highlighted that in his interviews. A lot of the fights were meant to kind of evoke very anime stylistic transitions and fight mechanics, especially that last fight. If you've seen the film, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And so really enjoyed it. Thought it was really solid and was just really happy that all three of those movies were very solid and there wasn't a huge sore spot in there, just because I think when you do sporting movies, especially sporting movies spinning off from an iconic Rocky franchise, it's pretty tough to keep everything up to snuff. So really happy that it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, this is my number 8 as well. Really, really well done. And Jonathan Majors is absolutely terrifying in that movie. And I know that he's problematic in a lot of ways. And so I don't want to platform him. So yeah, good movie.
Yeah. My number 7 is Mission Impossible 7, Dead Reckoning Part 1. Yeah, there you go.
Right.
Long title.
I have that one further up. So okay. So we'll get to that. So my number 7 is Air. This is the movie that was, you know, it's got a local connection, right? Because it's set in Beaverton at Nike. And it's a fun little movie. I mean, it's surprisingly good. It's not a sports movie, not really, you know, because it is about Michael Jordan, but it doesn't really feature the sports side of things. It's all about the, you know, how did Nike come to dominate basketball shoes? Because at the time that all this happened, they were known for running shoes. And I like the bit in it. I think it's in one of the trailers where the Matt Damon character is talking to his boss, Jason Bateman, and Jason Bateman's like, you know, okay, what's your pitch here? And Matt Damon's like, we suck at basketball shoes. and Jason Bateman's like, I don't love it as a motto kind of. But there's also a hilarious reference in this to Joe Versus the Volcano, which is a funny Tom Hanks comedy from late 80s, probably maybe early 90s, that your mom and I looked at each other and we're like, is this happening? Yeah, this is happening. They're going to make the reference. Mm-hmm. But yeah, very, very enjoyable.
Yeah. Did they actually do filming location wise in Beaverton, or did they just,
I doubt it. There were some establishing shots, but I have a hard time believing that they were actually filming in Oregon.
I feel like we would have known because it's so close to us, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing in particular about it that necessitates,
right, they can shooting if they're here. Indoors, then it's not like they need to. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So my number 6 is Dream Scenario.
Oh, okay. This Nicolas is one I have Cage. Not seen. So
yeah, Nicolas Cage, A24. I saw this at a like early Tuesday screening, so it was before the even Thursday night screening at the Alamo Drafthouse. Got an early ticket and had a blast. I mean, I had a feeling I was going to love it because it's very A24 in the sense that it's got the really beautiful cinematography, really eerie acting, really eerie, horrific visuals, and then kind of starts out pretty slow with a interesting concept and then goes bonkers. And there's, for anyone listening, if you've seen Dream Scenario, The scene in the apartment, you'll know what I mean, is one of the loudest theater reactions I've ever been in terms of the visceral vocal, why? And so had a blast, thought that the performances were great and just really lived up to my expectations, and they were already pretty high. So had a good time.
Sweet. All right. My number six is Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves.
I knew this was going to show up.
And this is another one of those ones where it's just like my expectations going into it were not super high, just because like I've literally never played Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. I have no connection whatsoever to any of the lore. I don't like Dungeons and Dragons podcasts. Just no, thank you. But this movie was an absolute blast. It's just one of those like really, really well executed action comedies. Reminded me a little bit of like Game Night. Like it's a comedy, but it's way better than it deserves to be. And the same thing here. And it's just because the cast is super, super charming. And it all works really, really well.
Dungeons and Dragons is from the devil, Father. You can't be playing that.
I know, right?
Well, all right, on to your number five. My number five, yeah. I have John Wick 4.
Okay. John Wick 4 probably fits somewhere in here. It's just, I don't know.
You didn't have it in your top 10?
I didn't put it in my top 10.
Dude!
Yeah.
You're choking. That's so bad.
Yeah.
Shame on you.
I have to admit that I'm finding a little bit of diminishing returns on the John Wick franchise.
So. Oh, man. That's disappointing to hear because I love this movie.
Well, you might talk me into it. So
we'll have to rewatch it at some point. But
Do we have to, though? Because this is the reason that it's not on my list, because I have no desire to rewatch it.
Then we're very different then, because I have active desire to rewatch it, and I've already rewatched it. The issue that I think you're being reminded of is that the first scene in Osaka is not great. Osaka Continental, because it takes the heavy armored soldiers from the previous movie, puts it up to a million. But all the other fight scenes, I think, are maybe some of the best modern action scenes, specifically the one with the John Wick penguin. And by that, I mean... I can't remember the actor's name now, who does all the makeup work and is a famous martial artist.
Scott Adkins?
Yeah, Scott Adkins. And so he's incredible. And that whole scene is phenomenal. And then it goes right into the stuff in Paris with the car, and he's driving in a circle. And now he did all of that.
That scene did not work for me. That's like my biggest, come on.
Really?
Yeah.
The thing is, he did that. Like, that's all in camera. It's not CGI.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I loved that.
I don't know. I didn't like that at all. I did like the Adkins part. That was awesome.
Yeah, and the top-down fire shotgun is great.
That was insane. Yeah, I loved that.
So I have much more of a soft spot. It's probably my second favorite, maybe my favorite. Right out of the theater, it was my favorite John Wick. But I think John Wick 2 still takes the cake for me just because of... Smollier scene.
Yeah, that is a great scene.
So, I really love it. I think it was a great way to end the franchise, even though they're talking about doing more. So I guess we'll have to see where that goes.
Yeah, it honestly deserves to be on my list here. It's better than Air and Renfield and Boys in the Boat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not more entertaining than D&D Honor Among Thieves, I will say.
Whatever.
I could definitely watch that movie again. That was
I know
that
you was could. Really
fun. Yeah. Okay, so my number five, and I suspect that this one's further up your list, is Iron Claw, the Iron Claw.
It is up further on my list, yeah.
Okay, I'll wait for that then.
Cool.
So you're number four.
Yes, I have Across the Spider-Verse.
I have that one further up.
Sweet, all righty.
So then my number four is Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1.
Sweet.
I understand they're changing the title, so it's not Dead Reckoning Part 2, which, like, what are
really?
You doing?
It isn't?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I've heard that rumor anyway. We'll see if they do it. If they do, then they're going to have to rebrand this one.
It would just be Dead Reckoning?
Live, Die, Repeat, maybe?
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. We are a family that are in the bag for Mission Impossible movies, especially, like, 4 through 7.
I would say we're more than just in the bag. I don't know if there's a defender at this point because they are massive movies. They're Tom Cruise. It's hard to be a defender because they're that big. But I think we enjoy them more than most people. I think they're a very far league above most action franchises.
Yeah. Well, and I always say I think of Mission Impossible movies as better Bond movies because I've never really connected with James Bond movies. I like the Daniel Craig movies for the most part, but like I have no use. Like I would never rewatch any of the old Connery, any of the old Roger Moore. I'm just not interested. Mm-hmm. I like the way these ones are done. I like the first movie. The second movie is very disappointing to me. I feel like a parent who's like, I'm not angry, I'm disappointed. Mm-hmm. But then like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, they just keep getting better. I don't think that this one's as good as Fallout.
I don't think it's better than Ghost Protocol or Rogue Nation to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's still better than 1, 2, or 3, but it is really solid. I think the issue with the film that I have is that, and this is why it's so much further down my list, I feel like 4, 5, and 6 really honed in on having a balance of what I would call straight up action as well as heist spy-ish action in terms of the face masks, the going underwater to put a key card into something, the really the stuff you don't get out of a Bond film or stuff you don't get out of a John Wick film. Right. Mm-hmm. And so this movie was a lot more pure action. Also, don't love the AI villain. It is very relevant, which is nice. Sure. I just feel like there's potential for it to not age super well. It's not like AI is going to get less prevalent, but feel like once it gets more advanced, a very, very low level AI is going to be seen as a somewhat unbelievable villain. So I didn't love that aspect. I think that's why it's a little bit lower for me. But overall, I'm not going to be disappointed with Tom Cruise doing ridiculous stuff.
Yeah. All right. Your number three.
Yes. My number three is Oppenheimer.
Okay. I have that one further up.
Okay, now I'm seeing where this is going.
All right, so we'll talk about my three, which was one from further down, which was Barbie.
Perfect, yeah.
And Barbie is one of those things where, like, when I heard they were making a Barbie movie, I was like, come on, what are you doing? And then, like, you and your generation somehow made this into a thing.
We are, my generation is exclusively responsible for the marketing of this. It wasn't a production thing. It was literally just people made Barbenheimer a thing, and it's all my generation, and that's my generation's claim to fame.
Well, the funny thing is that, like, before anybody knew, like, that this is a feminist movie, that this is, like, actually a really socially relevant movie, and also hilarious and well directed and everything, people just saw Greta Gerwig, Barbie, yes, I'm in. And I wasn't there. I was like, I don't know. I'll wait to see. But yeah, credit to your generation for making it a thing.
I was also locked in from the beginning, especially because also, I don't know if you know this, but Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig are married, and Noah Baumbach did Marriage Story. He wrote it. I can't remember if he directed it, but he did write it. And so I was locked in pretty early on, and then you cast Ryan, you cast Margot, you're pulling the right strings, right? Like, you're getting the good cast. And then, like you said, really quite beautiful film, to be honest, and very socially relevant, hysterical. I mean, theater was loving it the whole time. And I actually did the Oppenheimer Barbie double feature on the same night, which was a ton of fun. Gonna remember that for a long time. I believe I had a 6 p.m. showing of Oppenheimer and then got out of it and walked over to Barbie about a half hour later. And it was wonderful.
Yeah. All right. Your number two.
My number two, I have Past Lives, which I know
this one I have not seen yet. We tried to watch it.
I know.
That was we couldn't get it to play, right? So,
I actually, for the longest time, had this as my number one and was like, there's no way this is getting beat because I think it's that good. I think it's – I don't want to talk about it too much because I know you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
But it's somehow simultaneously – soul crushing, but also beautiful. It's about just this relationship between these two people who are separated because one of the family immigrates earlier in the film. And it's kind of about the changes that happen over time and how tiny decisions can lead to big differences later on in life. And it's just stunningly acted, very subtle film. A lot of just kind of staring at each other because a lot of the film takes place over FaceTime or Zoom or any kind of virtual camera. So it's a lot of very subtle, not a ton of dialogue. So it's demanding a lot of the actors and actresses, and it's done just beautifully.
Right. And this is an international feature, right?
Yes, even though there is a solid chunk of it in English, because there is a American person introduced later that speaks English. And so,
and this is English and Korean, is that right?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I'll definitely check that one out. I expect that it'll probably make the Oscar list.
It made the Golden Globe and like all that stuff, so yeah.
Cool. Well, we can get back to that one when I get to it.
Mm-hmm.
That was your number two, right? So my number two was Oppenheimer.
Okay.
Which is interesting because I dinged John Wick 4 for like being something that I don't necessarily want to watch again, just because I found it exhausting, I will say. Oppenheimer is another movie that I think it's good enough that I wanted to put it on the list, but I'm not sure that I'd like to rewatch it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with lots of Nolan movies, I want to watch them more than once because I want to see how he pulled something off, right?
Like
The Prestige. I can watch it. I could watch it again every week for the rest of my life and probably be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd find new stuff in it. Oppenheimer, I don't expect that I would. But I thought it was really, really well done.
Similarly, because there's not a ton of artistic value in rewatching a biopic by the nature of it, because they're not trying to hide things, not trying to leave, you know, Easter eggs or something, right? Like it is what it's set out to be. And while I agree with that, I think it is done so well that I would want to rewatch it purely because I think it's a absolutely huge accomplishment in filmmaking, but for me specifically, for Christopher Nolan. I'm a huge Christopher Nolan fan, but I think you as well. I've been pretty critical about a couple of those films that people love. And so for me, I was like, yes, he's a beautiful director, but I want him to do something a little bit outside of his range that he's been in. And taking the step to do the R rating, to make it more mature, doing a couple more rather graphic scenes that are he's very grounded as in filmmaking as a filmmaker. And there are a couple scenes that go into the, I don't know how you describe it, but the scene where Florence Pugh is in the interview room. And then also when he's seen the people's skin being peeled off by the bomb, those are two scenes that I don't think would have been in a Christopher Nolan film even 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so those steps that I think he took is what boosted it up for me in terms of a film as well as a Nolan film, because it got outside of his comfort zone. It did something unique that I hadn't seen before from him. And I really respected that.
Yeah. And, you know, I have seen some criticism from people about the interview room scene. And I feel like it's an absolutely necessary. I mean, it's actually not as explicit as people say. Like you can tell what's going on, but it's not actually super explicit, but like it shows like what Oppenheimer's wife is feeling at that moment and what Oppenheimer is feeling as well. Like he's feeling naked.
I think it's incredibly important to Kitty, Emily Blunt's character. I think that she is actually really, especially in the second half of the film, at the core of the emotional resonance with the film. And so I think that was very important for both those characters, and thought it was I was shocked when that was happening. I was like, oh my goodness, he's doing something kind of nuts. Like, I really did not expect this. By he, I mean Christopher Nolan. And so,
was
just really, really happy and surprised with this film.
Yeah. And we're going to have two very different number ones.
Yeah. Very, on very, the list. Very different. My number one is The Iron Claw.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing your number one is Across.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that's another film I was also thinking of being number one until later on. The Iron Claw, I was actually talking to Mom about this earlier, and I think, and this might sound selfish, but I think I got a different, I wouldn't say more or less, because it's, you know, like, as a parent, it's a whole different thing, but as an athlete, I think it was a whole different thing as well. And I think the film really discusses a couple of major topics, including like toxic masculinity. And, you know, one of the biggest things that I thought really resonated with me was kind of how a sport can kind of rob you of your humanity if you let it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this was really done mostly by the father in the story, right? Like, he was responsible for that, but it really hit me because it showed how at a certain point, all of the boys, except for Michael, really loved what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And then obviously it took a really dark turn, especially Kevin, who really was set up to be this pinnacle and this amazing athlete for their family. And then he's about to get it. And he's like, actually, nope, David's going to come and do it. Oh, nope, Carrie's going to come and do it. Right.
Yeah.
And so that really hit me because there's a similar thing. I'm not going to provide the example because it probably won't make sense to viewers, but there's a couple things in my life where I'm like, oh, I have had the equivalent of that in the swimming world where mm-hmm. someone else ends up taking your spot, right? Someone takes your travel roster, someone takes your spot. Like there's a very nice comparison to be made there. So that really hit me. I cried twice during the film. And I've never cried during a movie, full transparency. Mm. So I was like trying to hold it back. I was in the theater like, nope, this isn't happening. You're not crying. And then when Carrie shows up to heaven and they see Jack Jr., that's I mean, spoiler alert, I guess, to people who are watching the film.
Right, right.
Listening to the podcast. But that really got me. And then, of course, the scene at the end where the kids tell Zac Efron, we can be your brothers. That really, really hurts. Well, it was beautiful, but it hurt. And so,
your mom and I just saw this 2 days ago, right? Mm-hmm. And like the last showing in our area, it looks like it's gone from theaters now. But yeah, like that whole men don't cry thing that, you know, the dad is like, it took you a long time to get up, you know, like the dude was concussed. Like he had literally just been thrown down onto concrete and was, you know, suffering a brain injury. And now you're going to hassle him and then give his spot to his brother because he wasn't tough enough for that.
Yeah.
And
this is how we test you. Like,
And like that's one of those things where as a dad, I'm like, how do you do that? You know, how do you do that to your kid? And you know, in your career, right. I've kind of deliberately gone a little hands off on like, I was never as locked in on swimming as your mother was. Right. Because I didn't want to be putting any pressure on you.
Yeah.
And that was my way of doing it. It's probably not perfect, but it's definitely better than what the dad was doing there.
I mean, I think it was perfect, you know, and so I thank you for that. And I obviously agree. It's much better than the alternative. I know people who have had not the same experiences, because obviously this is a pretty significantly awful example, but experiences where their parents were very hard on them.
Yeah.
And so that hit pretty hard. But aside from the emotion and all that, there's not a bad performance.
Right.
It's surprisingly edited really, really well. There's some really cool overlay shots of, there was this one shot where all the brothers were sitting there working. I think it was like they were working out or they were in the middle of a match, and it kept on overlaying multiple different brothers. I don't know how to really describe it very well, but there was some really good editing choices. Performances, like I said, just blew me away. Specifically the dad. I knew him from Mindhunter,
because
the Bill Tench. Fight Club. Right, yeah. I think it's Bill Tench, I can't remember.
Yeah,
coolest name ever for a character. And I was really blown away by him. He was so terrifying. And then Zac Efron, who...
He was great.
I was sitting there like, how am I blown away by you right now?
He tears your heart out at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, like Jeremy Allen White's always good, right? We know that from The Bear, and he's great here as well. I was so on the dad's performance. It was a little one note to me.
That's what mom said as well.
I think it's appropriate to the character. Like he is not a character with an arc in any way.
Right. Yeah.
You know, he starts and ends in the same spot. If anything gets worse, where he's, you know, threatening somebody to hold on to his precious thing. The hilarious thing though is like we've never been a family that enjoyed wrestling, right? WWE or anything like that. I've always been why would I watch that pageantry? I don't need to. I don't need that in my life. But it's a movie that makes you interested in it.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say is that the heart of the film is in the relationship with the brothers. And I was worried because I purposely knew it was a true story. I didn't want to know anything about it. I knew there was some tragedy, but I stayed away. And I was worried that it was going to be this thing where the kids started kind of turning on each other and being toxic. And even though there's moments where they're like, why did you let me speak? Right. They forgive and forget immediately. And so when they, for example, sneak out to go to Michael's little concert that he does, mm-hmm. and they're all supporting him, and they're all happy. Like, they're actually happy to be there, because the stereotype is the wrestlers probably don't want to be there listening to music, but they're loving it because it's their brother who's doing what he loves. That was really beautiful. And that's when I knew, oh, this movie's going to break my heart.
Yeah.
Because they're setting up all these beautiful people to then rip it away. I thought also that David, the guy who acted for David, he was in Triangle of Sadness. Mm. He might have been the best performance, to be honest. I'm not sure if I can pin it down, but he was terrific.
Yeah. I forgot that he was in that. The guy who played Mike, there's a little less for him to do, but like after his brain damage.
His coma, you know, and yeah.
Like that was very effective. Mm-hmm. Like you could go really, really broad with something like that. And I felt like it was subtle. It was just, I don't know if he got to like watch actual, you know, what the guy was like after that, but it was extremely convincing.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Cool. Well, I'm glad we talked for that long on that movie, because that's a good one.
Yeah, I feel like for our number ones, we should talk at length for sure.
Yeah. And on that note, you know, I'm not sure how much I can really talk about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. It's an unadvertised part one, right? Mm-hmm. You get to the end of the movie and you're like, oh, but what?
Right.
But it was so good up to that point that I was like, I didn't see the end coming. I thought, okay, you know what? We could go another 20 minutes. That'll be fine. We can wrap this up. But no, that's not going to happen. It's just more or less assembling the team for the next movie, right?
Right, yeah. And I think a lot of people right off the bat kind of complained about the fact that it was a part one. Mm-hmm. But it really is Gwen's movie.
Yeah,
even it is Miles' movie, but I view it as Gwen's movie. You do start the film with her. It is about her and her father, and that affects the rest of the film. So if you look at it through that lens, she does have a complete arc. So for me, it works completely as a film on its own. Similar to how, in a way, Infinity War is kind of a hidden part one, because it picks up right after. And so there's a complete arc there as well, but people don't complain about it in the same way. So I think people just see the whole, you know, it's a very obvious cliffhanger, and then they get mad. But I think when you really nail down the details of the film, I think it's maybe one of the best sequels of all time.
Yeah, yeah. And it's one of those things where, like, we were late adopters on Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you were kind of over animated movies entirely at some point. You're just like, no, I don't want to do animated films anymore.
Yeah.
And we kept hearing good things about it. We're like, yeah, whatever. And then we finally watched it. And we both looked at each other and like, man, how did we miss this?
Yeah.
This is so good.
Yeah.
And it's another one of those kind of things too, where the animation style is so unique that I feel like it'll age well as well.
It's changed animation. Everybody's doing it now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was going to say it's being an animated film is different. Measuring performance is different, right? Like it's mostly measuring how well the voice actors are able to put their emotion into what they're saying, and then how well the animator is able to take that and harness it into what would be a realistic bodily reaction to those words. Because obviously, as a voice actor, you're just saying the stuff, and yeah, you're probably getting into character with your body, but that's not necessarily being transitioned completely into animation. And so I thought that the way that they used color in Gwen's Earth was really smart. Mm-hmm. I thought the way that like Oscar Isaac's the design for Oscar Isaac's Spider-Man was so cool.
Yeah.
Him being that huge awesome. And menacing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Soundtrack, obviously, just incredible. And so yeah, beautiful film. Was so happy that it was as good as it was. I don't think they're going to fumble the bag. I hope they don't. They better part three, or I guess part two, but the third of the films. If it's the best, we might be in the conversation for best superhero trilogy of all time.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Good stuff. So that's our top 10 for the year. Mine was weird. Ethan's was more respectable. So let us know what your top movies of the year were for 2023. But before we sign off, we also want to talk about some of our favorite first time watches in 2023. So it's not necessarily a new movie. Actually, it's not a new movie, but it's something that was new to us. And I'm not going to count anything that we talked about on the Oscars thing last year, because I watched a whole bunch of really, really good movies from 2022 for the first time. But since we've already talked about those on the Oscars, I'm not going to do it.
Mine are all really old movies, except for one of them. So
okay, I've got two silent movies.
So, sweet. Awesome.
Yeah.
I can, should we just go one at a time or?
Yeah. We'll just alternate.
So first one is actually a movie I got for Christmas, which is High and Low, which is a Akira Kurosawa film. Very iconic director. Beautiful. I mean, just wonderful. It's it starts out as kind of just a intense psychological thriller and then turns kind of into a crime thriller. I didn't know it was going that direction. So when we were watching it, I was like, wow, this is going across so many genres and was awesome. Just really impressive. So very happy that I watched it.
Nice. I have four movies, but it's really four clusters of movies because some of these I did talk about on another podcast on Take Me to Your Reader. So I want to talk about The Hunt, which was, I think, from 2020, maybe 2021, which is an interesting take on The Most Dangerous Game mixed with politics and really, really good. Mm-hmm. And then A Game of Death from 1945, which is a remake of the original The Most Dangerous Game. It's just better.
Very nice. Another one of mine you'll love. I don't know how this happened. I did not see Mad Max Fury Road until this December.
Yeah.
We had tried it a while ago, and I think I fell asleep, which was, I don't know how I would have fallen asleep looking back at it. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's probably a top 10 action movie of all time, maybe top five. I'm gonna say top five. It's that good.
I think the fact that we got the Furiosa trailer kind of made you think, yeah, maybe we should watch that.
Yeah, I gotta get caught up before Anya Taylor-Joy and Chris Hemsworth go rock the stage.
Yep. Okay, so another one of mine. I actually, when I looked at my Letterboxd review for this, I think I only give it 3 stars, but it's one of those movies where there's scenes from it that just live in my head rent free, and the movie is Margin Call. And it's, if you've ever seen The Big Short, you know, it talks about the 2008 financial crisis. Margin Call is basically set in an investment bank during like a 24-hour period, right at the tipping point between everything's hunky-dory and everything has gone bad. And it's, you know, somebody, Zachary Quinto plays an analyst who puts together the pieces and says, we're in a really bad place here. This is, we could go under because of what's happening. And it's got Jeremy Irons in it too, who's absolutely tremendous. It does have Kevin Spacey in it. So if you don't want to watch any of his movies, don't watch this one, but well worth a watch.
Definitely. I remember we actually talked about that film a little bit. The next film I have is, I talked to you briefly about it. It's called Fallen Angels. It's by Wong Kar-wai. It's a Chinese director and is potentially, for anyone listening, it's like ultra, ultra art house, like very, very artsy to the point where it's pretty snobby. like not many people have seen it. And if you do, the connotation of liking the film is that, man, you must love just really artistic, over the top, not like over the top films, but overly artistic to the point where it's pretty, I don't know what the word is. It's not as tangible. You know, it's very, very well done, though. It's one of my favorite films of this year, if you factored in all of the different films from both this year and any rewatches, and just super unique, really beautiful, and very fascinating.
Mm. Cool. So then another twofer that was from our Dracula podcast that we did, I watched Nosferatu from 1922, the silent film, the Max Schreck version, and then Nosferatu the Vampire, the Werner Herzog remake of it from the 70s. Very, very good, really interesting, and makes me really excited to see the Robert Eggers Nosferatu this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My last one is potentially the film that is known for the craziest twist of all time is Old Boy.
Oh, boy.
And I saw it in theaters. For context, the film is not, I think it is now being available on streaming services because I think it's its 20th anniversary. Mm. At least it was.
This isn't the Josh Brolin remake of it.
No, this is the original. Okay. And so I believe that it was its 20th anniversary and there was not a remaster, but I think it's like a 4K remaster kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so they put it back in theaters. And I wanted to go see it because you can't rent it anywhere. It's not available in the US. Mm-hmm. I think it's actually on Netflix now, and it's probably due to the fact that they remastered it. But I was like, if I am not going to be able to see this film, I got to go see it. And so if you've seen the film, you know the twist. If you haven't, don't
look it up. Did you know it going in?
I actually did know it going in. I unfortunately knew it. I had a buddy of mine who saw it and didn't know the twist. And he was like, you know, you said it was messed up, but I really didn't expect that.
Yeah.
And so.
Do you feel like that harmed your experience of the movie?
I do. I still gave it a 4.5 out of 5 on Letterboxd because I think it's absolutely brilliant. Disgusting, but brilliant.
Yeah.
But I am curious. I'll never know. You know, I really do wonder if I hadn't known. Mm-hmm. And just because it was like you're rewatching it in a way, or you're looking for all the hints and details. So it made sense more to me rather than being shocked with the villain connecting the dots for him in the end.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and then my very last one, I actually didn't write down what the year for this one is, but everybody knows this movie, Metropolis, Fritz Lang movie. Silent film, pretty long one, but, you know, it lived up to the hype. It's really, really good. Some of the visuals in it are absolutely stunning.
Very nice.
Okay, so I think that's about it for this episode.
I think so.
Like I said before, let us know if there's any favorite movies that you had from the past year or any favorite first-time watches. Maybe they could turn into first-time watches for us. That'd be awesome. And like I said, we'll probably at some point in the spring do a podcast for the Oscars, talking about the nominees for our picks and who we think will actually win. And we will let Peter defeat us again for like the fourth
year. I'm determined to just lock in and be really, really intentional with my picks.
Okay.
Even though he's still going to destroy us.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thank you, Ethan.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for suggesting the idea, because we haven't done one of these literally since the Oscars.
Yeah, I saw a ton of people doing them all over the internet. And I was like, oh, man, I want to talk about my favorite films.
Yeah, yeah. You know, also like Ethan said earlier, we're going to watch a bunch of movies for the Oscars, and they would probably very easily displace a bunch of these. But that's the way things work.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.